otherwise...
It's just taking up some of the time in the brain. The problem is that it makes the history and the narrations worth reading, otherwise it's not even worth reading. Because while we're a human being, we have the intelligence to understand what is the absolute truth, what's the purpose of life, and we can understand about the personality of Godhead. You see in the airplane so many people reading fiction, reading magazines, but it's very rare. Occasionally you see somebody reading a Bible, or in India you see them reading Bhagavad Gita, but that's like 1 out of 100 maybe. Actually, I haven't seen anybody read a Bible for many years, even in the West. There must be someone that don't see it much. So here, our Srimad Bhagavatam is discussing all about the different pastimes of the Lord, His qualities, His rupa, His form, lila, pastimes, guna. We hear about how the Lord delivers His different devotees and how He reciprocates. That helps us to develop our faith. Because otherwise it's all kind of theoretical. It's like somebody is talking about, well, there's this nice lady I want you to meet, you know, you want to get married, so... What does she look like? Well, I don't know what she looks like, but I heard she's really nice. So, well, what does she do? I don't know what she does, but I mean, she's really nice and she's a great person. Well, what are some of her qualities? Well, I don't know any about her qualities, but after I think, well, who's the mystery lady? So most of the religions, they don't tell you very much about God. As I was explaining to the Unitarian Church, you don't have to give up whatever you believe, but this is like postgraduate study. Whatever you learned before, that's just kind of the basics. But here you can actually understand what is the personality of Godhead, what's He like, what does He do. And the other aspect, of course, this chapter and the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is to take us back to Godhead. So we can focus our mind, if we get attached to Krishna, then naturally we'll be drawn to go to Him. So the easiest way of getting attached to Him is by hearing about Him, hearing about His pastimes, His different incarnations. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because of His process of chanting, it's very easy to get attached to the Lord and get some experience about His greatness. Of course, it's like people hear about Jesus walking on water, performing some miracles, so that helps to build up His resurrection. Things like that, then people build up a certain amount of faith. So the Vedas, they also tell us about all the different, I mean not all, but so many of the different incarnations. And we have one Prabhupada was once giving a class on, forget whose appearance it was one of the avatars' appearance, and then he said when it's an appearance day of one of the avatars, we should discuss, you know, other avatars as well. So then he talked about a number of different avatars. Just like we have the Puranas are filled with these histories of the different avatars. Unfortunately, you have like one of my disciples was Indian Christian. He was Bhakta Jacob, and then he's initiated now, has spiritual name, and he was. Researching different things, and he found this. He showed me some article, letters from some from Max Müller and some people in Germany, and he was saying that here it's very hard to convert the Brahmanas because they're so faithful. They have so much faith in their doctrine and in the incarnations. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to learn Sanskrit. I'm going to translate the books in such a way that people will lose faith in them. Nice guy. Is it right? It's all like, all these letters are important. Now he's like, everyone thought Max Müller is so nice. He's translated all our literatures in English so we can get them. But like, instead of deities, he would say idols. Instead of histories, or he would use the word mythology. So in this way, but of course the Indians don't know what these words mean so much. So for them, when they say, oh, I'm worshipping my idol, it doesn't mean it means their deity. You know, they're chanting because in their mind they're thinking probably my Thakur, my deity. But if a Christian hears that, I worship my idol, idolatry, you know. They get all. But it didn't have as much of an impact. But it had some impact. And I remember when I was in Canada, and one of the Hindu organizations invited me to speak, and I said, so he's going to speak on our mythology. And I was, you know, new, fanatic, and I said, it's not proper. Mythology is not the proper word to describe the histories of the Veda. These are histories. These are true stories. But many Indians think that this is just mythology. Some people don't really know what mythology means. But Prabhupada, he taught us that these are histories. These are true stories. This really happened. So there's a lot of the Kali Yuga is trying to undermine this whole, well, we want to train our children, we want everyone to know this, so we believe in these histories. These are things that happened. But some of it's confusing because it's not only the history of our present day or even our present creation, but maybe of a different creation. It's like in Padma Purana, in the Bhagavatam, it gives a history about Narasimhadev. When Padma Purana talks about a couple of other appearances of Narasimhadev from previous kalpas, where Hiranyakashipu, instead of worshipping Brahma, he worshipped Shiva. And then he told his son, you know, you accept me as Supreme Lord, I can't accept you, your power is coming from the Supreme Lord. Okay, at least accept Shiva as Supreme Lord. And then, I guess some very interesting histories about that time. Narasimhadev had constructed a gigantic stadium, a covered stadium, but it was like 100 kilometers long, 60 wide. It was a huge covered area. And inside there was air conditioned and climate controlled. There was no old age, no disease while you were inside, so you walked out. But you go there, you know, people, sick people go there and they get relief. And so they had a lot of faith in Hiranyakashipu, and they'd have big Hiranyakashipu kirtans, where they would, you know, we, you know, Jai Hiranyakashipu ki, and I don't know exactly what mantras they chanted for him, but they had big kirtans, and they had a lot all one side, go there and eat as much as you wanted, you wouldn't get sick, you know, nice, whatever their food was. So they had this whole setup, and people would go there on pilgrimage and have darshan of Hiranyakashipu, and so he was really puffed up. And he told his son that, you know, you should, you had to accept me. And then I went through all the normal things, trying to kill Prahlad in so many different ways, which all failed. But one thing was mentioned, I don't think it was mentioned in Bhagavatam, that he got so tired of trying to kill him, he said, we can't kill him, you know, so let's just get rid of him. So they put him on the bottom of the ocean, covered him up with a mountain of boulders, so that he was just out of sight, out of mind, we don't have to deal with it. Then he had so many mystic powers, Prahlad, he became lighter than the lightest and just came up right through the mountain and floated on the surface, came back in, walked into his father's Yeah, hi Dad, how you doing? You know. That is too much. And then he said, okay, I'm going to personally kill you by sunset if you don't accept me as the person, you know, as the Supreme. And so, will your Lord come and save you? He said, of course he'll come to save me. So then it said that Narsingadev, he came in the late afternoon, he came flying through the surrounding metropolis that was around this big hall. And people saw him and got frightened, half lion, half man. And he's kind of walking through the streets, flying in, getting for Narsingadev. And sometimes walking, sometimes flying. People are running and didn't know what to think. And then he came into that stadium. And then he was flying in the back. And Radhika said, who is that beast? Send the Air Force. So they get planes to fly. It was so high, so they have planes flying. Send the Air Force, tell him we don't allow beast here. He should go out. If he doesn't go out, just kill him. So some of his Air Force went over there, told him, you know, but so Narsingadev's mane spread out. And then when any of the planes touched one of the hairs from his mane, it was like one of those mosquito zappers. Just zapped the plane and it came down as ashes. And so the whole Air Force got finished, more or less, by trying to attack Narsingadev. Then Hiranyakashipu had all kinds of missiles, special missiles, mystical missiles, which he was throwing at Narsingadev. Narsingadev would catch it, throw it down, explode it, throw it back at Hiranyakashipu differently. So finally he used all his missiles. So then he came himself to fight. He was really angry. Then had the whole fighting scene. Lord Narsingadev let him loose a little bit, then he took him back and just kind of held him like a big insect. Lord Narsingadev was so big compared to Hiranyakashipu that he could hold him like an insect. And he's like kicking and struggling and just waiting until the sun set, because they can die by day or night. So then he sat on Hiranyakashipu's big throne there in the worship area, put him on the lap. So it's amazing. I was personally in the room when Prabhupada told there was a Jai Sachi Nandan Prabhu. He used to do a translation. He was trying to do the Sat Sandarbha Sajiva Goswami. He said, it's a bit, you're not ready for that. Your Sanskrit's not good enough. You should do the Padma Puran or the Vishnu Puran, because we need those also. For those are very much Vishnu Tattva. So Prabhupada wanted him to translate, so that was authorized to read. It's amazing, different pastimes of the Lord. When, like we call Lord Madhusudana. But what is the pastime of Madhusudana? Who is Madhu? We know he's a great demon and the Lord killed him. But he had achieved so many mystical powers that he could do such amazing things that when he was fighting with the devas, leading all the demons in a big war with Star Wars in the heavenly planets, then Ganesh and all the different devas, they were on their mounts and they were fighting with his demons. But then Madhu, he made all the demons look like devas. So the devas couldn't tell who's a demon and who's a deva. Everyone looked like devas. But the demons could tell. So the demons, so it's like, Ganesh, why are you attacking me? You know, Yamaraj, what's happening? What am I doing here? But no, there's another Yamaraj there. What's going on here? Who's the real Yamaraj? You know. So there was very difficult to fight if, you know, like you're playing football, everybody got, one's got a red, someone's got a blue, or you can tell who's who, but here everybody looked the same. So the demons are getting an advantage. And then the Brahma came down and helped at that time, of course, Kartikeya, he's a general of the devas, and told him, you better get Vishnu to come, because this Madhu's mystical powers are too difficult. So then they all prayed for Vishnu, and then Vishnu came on his Garuda, and with his Sudarshan Chakra put out so much effulgence that then it was like everybody was exposed. Who was the real demon and who was the deva, all the mystical covering. So then the devas could really get the demons. Then Madhu, he took the form of Shiva and attacked Vishnu. But Vishnu, this is Madhu, the demon. So he let loose his Sudarshan Chakra and cut the head off of Madhu, but he's in the form of Shiva. But before the Sudarshan Chakra left, Madhu left that body, took a subtle form. But it appeared that Vishnu had killed Shiva. Then Madhu came out in the form of Durga. You killed my husband! And then attacked Vishnu, threw some weapons at Vishnu. And then Vishnu knew this is again Madhu. So he threw the Sudarshan Chakra at Madhu in the form of Durga, cut off her head. Before the Sudarshan Chakra left, he already left the body. Took a subtle form and entered into the mind of Kartikeya, saying, look it, your father and mother have just been killed by Vishnu. You have to take revenge and attack Vishnu. So the Kartikeya, he was also getting influenced, and he was getting very ready to attack Vishnu. And then Brahma came and told him, look it, this is all the illusion of Madhu. You look in Kailash, you have mystical power. Your mother and father are still there. These are all just, bogus, whatever, imitation Shivas and Durga. Then he looked at Kaila, oh, mother, father, okay. So it's like this Madhu was such a treacherous guy with so many powers. And finally, when Vishnu finally got rid of the Madhu demon. So he was like probably in history the most complicated, powerful demon. He had so many different, even Brahma, everybody had to get into the act of just like taking over the whole universe. So I don't know. It'd be great to see some. I mean, these are better than the fiction. I mean, the fiction is nothing. But this is like so many amazing pastimes of the Lord with different special effects and things, if you can imagine. It's. You have, of course, in the so many different pastimes. Of course, Bhagavatam is filled with wonderful pastimes. So, Dhruva's liberation, and our own this Kalpa's Hiranyakashipu pastime, and Anushingadev saved Prahlad. The different pastimes of Varaha, Kurma, Matsya. But for the devotees, when they hear the pastimes of the Lord because of from the devotees, then they actually develop more faith, and they see how the Lord is truly amazing, and then how in his pastimes, like in the Bhagavatam, he's Ranchor. Rukmini writes to him to save her, and he's in the middle of a battle. He leaves the battle, everything, so Krishna has finally showed his true nature. He's a coward, he ran from the battle, but he's just going to save his devotee, which was more important to him than some little battle. And how Krishna was reciprocated, like with Bahulasva, and what's the other devotee, the poor devotee, Sutapta, There were two devotees in Mithila Desh. Shrutadev. And one was very poor. He was a poor Brahmin, the other was a big king. And when Krishna arrived, took two forms, came off his chair, went to Baluasa, gave him the royal reception with the Brahmanas and the golden containers washing his feet and so many different offerings and things. And he went to Shrutadev. And he didn't have anything to offer. He had a grass mat and a glass of water with a tulsi in it and sweet words and obeisances. But Krishna took the offerings of both his devotees. It's not like you had to be a rich devotee in order to worship him. But you had to just... both of them were giving from their heart and giving according to their capacity. So there's so many amazing pastimes like that, which help you to understand the greatness of Krishna's kindness. Then activities of great devotees, of course, Srila Prabhupada. I was present once when in Mayapur he got this, Mayapur, Calcutta, no, I don't remember, but I think it was Calcutta actually. But maybe it started in Mayapur, continued in Calcutta. But he got a letter from a couple, I think they're from America, and they said that, Prabhupada, we're your aspiring disciples. We want to take initiation from you. But we're chanting 16 rounds, but sometimes due to so many different works and tests, different problems, that we're not always able to complete the rounds, so we make it up, we're trying to chant, and we're trying to follow all the four principles. But some of our friends, they take intoxication, so sometimes we fall under their influence and we get haribol. We break that principle, but we're struggling. We want to come become qualified and get your initiation. We want to follow, have a regulated family life, but sometimes we're not able always to follow perfectly. So we're feeling very much unqualified, but we're just depending on your mercy. We want to be your disciples. We want to serve you properly. And when Prabhupada read the letter, I mean, maybe some people think, "Oh, fallen souls," or unqualified. But no, he was crying. He started to literally cry. I mean, I've seen Prabhupada cry a few times, but this is one of the times. And he says, "Look at how hard it is to be a devotee in the West. Look at how you have to struggle and..." They're trying so hard. And then he just like kept, he was like meditating on them for some days. When he was in Calcutta, there was some of these really rich, you know, aristocratic businessmen. There are some wealthy people in India, but they're not, they're actually very pious people. They have the deities in their house, and they're vegetarian. I mean, now it's degrading a little bit, but before it was like that. The really wealthy Indians were, at least the Hindus, they were the Gujaratis and Marwaris and most of them vegetarian. He was just saying, look at, he explained the whole story, showed a little bit of the letter, and to see how hard it is to be a devotee in the modern world and how they're struggling to be a devotee. And then he turned around and said, what are you doing? What struggle are you making? Then they thought about it and said, actually it's true. I mean, I was born in a vegetarian family, you know, but I never struggled to upgrade my devotional service. I mean, I take coffee and tea, and I'm not even trying to give it up. I know it's not, you know, the best thing to do. And they got him really, you know, got him to be humble and kind of think about how they were not doing much to elevate, although they had such a good advantage, good family, wealthy family. The vegetarian and everything devoted to Vishnu, to God, Hindus, pious Hindus. The Prabhupada was really moved. So he wanted to give blessings to this family that he was appreciating with how much of a struggle. It's not an easy thing to be Krishna conscious in the modern world. You see how Prabhupada was so merciful. then give some hope, right? That there's hope. Prabhupada is so merciful, we have such a merciful founder, acharya, spiritual master, that certainly if we keep trying, that he's going to have his mercy on us. I joined in 68, so there were some things happened in 66, 67. I heard from some devotees that were in the temple in New York. I don't know if it was 66 or 67, but there was some Bhakta, friend of Krishna, whatever you want to call him, he was visiting the temple, and he was having a very difficult time trying to follow the principles. And I don't know what happened, but why he got so frustrated, but somehow he got frustrated, and they say that he actually committed suicide. And then Prabhupada asked, where is this person? I remember his name, Steve, Ed, something, whatever. So where is he? I don't see him. And he said, well, he committed suicide, Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada started crying for him and prayed to Krishna that, where is he now? Where is our Bhakta, whatever his name was? And so we're going in the forest, we're hitting our head against the trees, our head against the stones. Where is this Bhakta? Please allow him to immediately take birth and family of a devotee and to continue on with his devotional service. And Prabhupada was being so merciful, otherwise he'd be Central Park, wherever he committed suicide, floating around as a ghost. So he prayed, immediately let him take birth. So, if anybody had a child around 1966, 67, maybe. Like that, Prabhupada was so much concerned about even a person who wasn't his disciple, wasn't even following the principles, was just coming to the temple in short time, but he had some questions, he was chanting, he was practicing a little bit. And Prabhupada was so mercifully moved, crying for him, praying for him. So Prabhupada was so merciful. I remember there was some leader from Australia, we were in Mayapur that time, we got the letter somebody wrote. We found that he was breaking principle. We threw him out on the street, rascal. And Prabhupada started crying. And he said, he's been serving so long. Maybe he had some mistake. He should go to him, fall at his feet, and beg him to come back to Krishna consciousness. Beg him three times. Then if he doesn't come, what can we do? At least we tried. But Prabhupada wasn't at all in favor that he just be thrown out without trying to save him and trying to help him to get properly fixed. So Prabhupada was such a really merciful. By his mercy we're all able to advance in our Krishna consciousness. So we saw many things like that. Naturally helped to build the faith when you see that someone is so merciful and all his examples. Of course, I had an unusual relationship with Prabhupada because he would go to Mayapur and spend 2 months there. So the first couple of days everything was praised, nice temple, very clean. But then after about 2 days, well, maybe sometime 24 hours, 72 hours, then he wanted Mayapur to be like a showpiece. So then he would start picking out all the faults. Like, what is that paper doing there, you know? So we had to get someone pick up we had to really make sure that everything was really clean. Any defect he found, it. So one time we were walking and then he saw some weeds growing in a corner of the property. He said, what are you doing? All the land must be utilized. This is Krishna's property. You have to grow something there. What is it? Okay, so then we knew every piece of land in Mayapur we had to grow it. Use it. One time we were walking and there was a faucet dripping. And Prabhupada said, who is responsible for this faucet dripping? This is wasting Krishna's energy. So Prabhupada was, you know, head of the ecologists. He was saving every drop. When he put tilak, he didn't want the water to drop off. He said, don't waste Krishna's water. So then everybody pointed at me, Jai Pataka Swami, he's the president here, he's the co-director. The water is dripping. He's responsible for everything, Prabhupada said. But There should be departmentalization, that everyone takes a responsibility for each department. So he should oversee all the departments, but who's responsible? Who's the one that's in charge of the plumbing? There should be a particular person just doing plumbing, or at least responsible for plumbing. And then Jayapataka should see that he's, but I wonder who's the person? Like Prabhupada was teaching us how to departmentalize, how to delegate. And also not waste Krishna's water by letting it to drip. So he had that side also, and he was constantly... One time I remember he was walking in the morning, and he had a round toilet where the samadhi, near the samadhi now, used to be, inside was for the ladies and outside was for the men. And it had like all toilets and showers around and inside. That was my architectural invention. I always got joked about that one, but anyway, interesting. But some Prabhupada was walking around it, and took his cane and knocked one door open. And then it wasn't washed. There was nice soil there. And then Prabhupada started giving us a lecture that a brahmana is pure, is clean. So he doesn't allow dirtiness to be around. So this is dirty. So what kind of brahmanas are you? Why are you allowing this? And so that was a hard one, you know, to apply exactly immediately. We didn't know what should run and wash it or what we should do, but we're getting the point that we should see that everything is clean in Mayapur. But he was like, when Prabhupada was in that mode of like instructing, he just had to just take it, digest it. And he was, and then just somehow, you know, Jayatirtha had pulled up from London, got out of his taxi, saw Prabhupada, they ran over, and was there. And then he's like seeing Prabhupada giving all of us the sauce because the bathrooms were dirty and white. So many leaders were there, and we weren't cleaning, but seeing the bathrooms were clean. And so we're all looking like, you know, really serious, you know. One thing was, I'm the local authority, so I had to do that, I had to see that. But how can you know, supervise every devotee if they walk aside to give this to ghost? You tell him, you know, whatever. That happened later. But then, Jayatirtha came up smiling and he's like looking around, like they're getting all the sauce. Like, I don't know if he thought it was funny or something. And then, Prabhupada looked at him. Like, you know, the Prabhupada's giving one person the sauce is like an example. It's for everybody to take a lesson from it. And he's like not in the right mood. He's sitting there smiling and almost laughing. And so then he gets on his case. You're a Brahmin. This is dirty. What kind of Brahmin are you? I just got here. I don't know. He was completely shook up. So there's some interesting pastimes in Mayapur. But many times, Prabhupada was very practical. Also, like one time he told me to stop, don't build any, don't fill up the basement of the chakra building, the long building, and put trap doors and have a stairway going down. So we can use that space, some storage or something. But I said, it's not so practical to have a steps going down like a subterranean, but better we put in doors. So how are you going to put in doors? Well, we just break a hole in the wall. Break my wall, break your head. But I was, you know, I had a close relation. So I said, it's going to cost more money, you're wasting money. I said, Prabhupada, if I could prove that it's cheaper to put a hole in the wall and pick a door than build a trap door and a stairway, then would it be all right? You prove it to me, then I'll accept. Otherwise, I don't want to waste Krishna's money. So those days, we didn't have computers. I had slide rules? I had to calculate how many bricks to be taken out in a doorway and all the expenses, multiply it by how many rooms. Like 4 hours later, after working all the engineering out, came back, So it's 5,000 rupees cheaper to put the doors in. And Prabhupada said, okay, all right. But by that time, they'd already made like six doors. The work was going on. He didn't stop the work, you know. So it was, but he accepted, if you could prove it, it was very logical. But his principle, don't waste Krishna's energy. So I had this, being directly under Prabhupada. He was my GBC, he was not, I had another GBC, but they weren't, the real one was him. So he was always getting on our, making sure we improve things. He was checking at one time, the Saradanya was doing a night guard because there was some dacoits attacking in the village. So he was afraid maybe he'd get attacked. And so the devotees, the lotus building was half constructed, and they're walking around the lotus building and to see. And sometimes there was no parapet wall in the upper floors, so sometimes you get like tired and almost catch yourself walking off the building. We took shifts. We had different shifts, the Arjuna shift, the Bhima shift, and 3-4 devotees walking around. So this one devotee was walking, and then he felt that someone was there. Now, you feel like somebody's there. He took his flashlight, flashed it under the stairway, and he felt like someone was there. And it was Prabhupada crouched down. Then he stood up, so I was just checking on you. So he So we saw Prabhupada in a more hands-on mode. When I just was a new devotee, then Prabhupada had me help Govinda Dasi in Montreal. When they went out shopping in the afternoon, then I had the duty to sit outside Prabhupada's room and what they call guru sit, like babysit guru, in case he needed something. Never, usually didn't need anything, but one time he called me in and he said that there was a cockroach. So he had to catch the cockroach, and then he took the cockroach by the back, opened the window of his room and said, listen, we've been confined in this little room, I want to give you the whole world to enjoy. Threw it out the window. He had a sense of humor. One time I was trying to dye Prabhupada's cloth using the rock dye, but I didn't know how to do it. We had too much water in the bathtub, and we're rubbing these rocks together. And Prabhupada would come in and said, it's not thick enough, not concentrated enough to actually tint the cloth. So we're there for hours and hours rubbing these rocks trying to get it right. And then Prabhupada wanted to see what was in the basement. He was on the first floor in this apartment building about 2 blocks from the Park Street Montreal Temple. And then when he came up, the secretary said that Prabhupada went in the basement, there was a big rat that jumped out. And everybody's thinking, you're startled at something in the dark, some big animal comes and jumps. And Prabhupada said, Hare Ram! Just chanted Hare Ram. Every daily thing, it was like pastimes. Maybe not the Supreme Lord, but his pure devotee. Then he told me he wanted me to get him a flower, a rose every day. He said, this will make my life longer, increase my longevity. He liked roses. I'm a little bit allergic to roses, but he's, especially the Vrindavan one, but he liked roses. So anyway, then I phoned up, went back to the temple, phoned up a florist and said, I want to get a rose. So I ordered a rose and I was going to go to... And then Hansaduda came up and so what are you doing? The temple president, I'm just a Brahmin Bhakta, right? Somehow I got the service though for Prabhupada. So Prabhupada told me to get him a rose. What is this nonsense? You had to do your service in the temple. You can't get a rose. I'll do my service, I'll work overtime, whatever, I'll do my service, but Prabhupada asked me personally to get him a rose. So I got him a rose, and he was shouting at me, the old days. My ears were, my head was exploding, and then I went off. So okay, I'm getting Prabhupada rose, you know. It's a direct order from the guru. Now gurus are told not to give direct orders because they get interfering with the tribal president. But anyway, Prabhupada was above all that. So I was just walking and I was so angry. I was so like angry that why has the Tuta have to be shouting at me like that and all the things, and just getting Prabhupada rose, and then like a big test. Then I suddenly realized I didn't write down the address of the florist. And it was like the road had ended. There was like, it was a T-junction. I saw over there by on the other side of the road was the florist. I said, let me go there. I went there. He said, why it took so long? I've been waiting for you. And the guy had the rose. Somehow I walked right to the Krishna. Let me put that in your book. Then I went back to Prabhupada. Then I went with the rose and handed Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, thank you. Smelled the rose. What I had to go through to get that rose to him. So sometimes you do services, there's so many different obstacles put up. But I'm very fortunate to have to be in Mayapur, and Prabhupada was coming there twice a year. During the Gaurapurnima time, he didn't give us much attention. He was focusing on the devotees from around the world. But during the other time, we were the only ones there, so we got the full broadside. I remember one time he called us all in the room and he said that this devotee here, Ganesham, this was during the Gaurapurnima time, he's going to go to preach, distribute books in, behind the Iron Curtain in the Soviet Union and other, whatever they called that pact at that time, the Warsaw Pact. Or so I wanted you all to give him your blessings, that he'll be successful. So he thought, who are we to give blessings? And Prabhupada, you're there. So someone asked, but Prabhupada, your blessings are more than enough. He said, no, this is a very difficult service and very dangerous, so I want to get as many blessings as possible, and you're all devotees, and Krishna will listen to you too. So he had us all give blessings. Of course, Janasham became Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. He did that, distributed many books, libraries. So it was. One day I remember I went in to see Srila Prabhupada and bowed down. He was sitting in Mayapur at a desk and he was like sitting like this. He looked up to me and said, you don't know what it's like to try to run a worldwide spiritual movement. The implication, I don't know if he said it or, but it was like a headache. It was like a big anxiety for him. One day we were walking and then he said that, he asked Giriraj, but after I leave, will the devotees stay in ISKCON? Will they stay together? He was concerned, will the movement go on? Because in India, so many spiritual movements, they fall apart after the founder leaves. Big gurus, and they make thousands of disciples, and once they leave, and disciples divvy up all the property and sell it off and liquidate everything, pretty soon there's nothing left. So once Prabhupada told us also that in Mayapur, he said, see, they sold off so much property from the Gaudiya Math. Things are run down. You have to promise me that at least, you'll maintain this Mayapur temple, and you, if you can increase things, I'll be very pleased. But at least maintain whatever I've done, maintain it at this standard. The Prabhupada was really concerned that somehow do something for him and maintain it. This association with Prabhupada, it's not always easy. working with all the godbrothers and devotees, they don't always appreciate what you do. But try to please them, but especially try to please Prabhupada and do something we can for him. To spread the Krishna conscious movement. Prabhupada was so pleased with his, with when Guru Das and Mukunda and Shyamasundara and their wives went to London and broke open the Bido contact and made a hit record and everything. And Prabhupada said, "Just see, my Guru sent a sannyasi there in London, he couldn't do much, but my grihasthas, they've done so much." So. Now we were discussing that Prabhupada also wanted farms. He wanted farm communities. And forget, there's a devotee going around. I think Raghava Pandit. Now his name is Bhakti Raghava Maharaj. He's really promoting. India gave us seminars of Varnashram Dharma. And he's doing some farm and in Karnataka and something in Indonesia. So he's reminding us all that we should try to do something. Rural also probably one of them. Now the dollar's crashing. And we don't know. Maybe everything gets all right. Maybe Prabhupada said, you know, this modern world could have a meltdown. You read a lot more about it now with the global warming. And I just was in the airport somewhere, I don't remember where, and had a big sign where the former Federal Reserve chairman or something said, if you don't deal with the global warming in 30 years, all the economies are going to be in meltdown. Meltdown or total collapse or something like that. It's good to have some. Prabhupada wanted to have alternative paradigms. Of course, most of us aren't trained up to be farmers. We're used to working in the city, and we like living in the country. It's good to learn. I got sent to the country in Mayapur, and we had a 35 rupee a month or a week, I forget, allowance a week. 35 rupees is not much. It's like those days, 7 rupees a dollar, $5. 5 times 7, 20. So it was, I got permission from Prabhupada to grow. So I was there in Mayapur in the grass hut. And Prabhupada sent money to build a lotus building. We were growing. It's actually, I was reading all these Indian agricultural books and different books, making our own manure. And I went trial and error a lot of things, but a lot of things to read the books, and they're growing just a little piece of land, maybe as big as this temple, maybe a little bigger. Tomatoes. I had 5 tons of tomatoes, so you know, it's like a, looks like a little piece of land, but we had so many tomatoes, you know, and then so we were selling the tomatoes in the market. We got early crops, so we got a good price. If you early beat the market in India, because they don't have all the big shipping, you get a better price. And then I remember once I grew radish. For a little piece of land, I got so much of these white Indian Asian radishes. The devotees said, "Please, Maharaj, don't give us any more radish." Like every day, radish soup, radish. Yesterday, Kamalini made me a radish. It was okay, we don't have radish. But the devotees were lamenting, someday we would have it. Because when you grow your own, it all comes at one time for about a few weeks. Then to grow okra, and then in the rainy season, one of the few vegetables that grows, that everybody, like, okra is not everybody's favorite anyway, but somehow we survive growing vegetables and growing wheat. Rice. I got an award for growing the best rice in the district one time. So that it's also, Prabhupada liked it that we were actually doing some growing. But Come on, Krishna, they can't do their Western. I'm never going to be able to. I said, probably give us a chance. We can try it. You know, we can. So he said, okay, you can. You have my permission. You can try it. Then I was associating with all the farmers. That's how I learned Bengali, talking with the local farmers. Unfortunately, Navadvip is considered the best Bengali in Bengal, between Calcutta and Navadvip, Santipur. That's pretty like standard Bengali. Some other place they have little dialects, but somewhat different. So more or less everybody can understand my Bengali, because I learned it from Navadvip. So they didn't hear about the Lord's pastime, hear about his pure devotees, exchange from the Lord and the pure devotee. With the determination of Prabhupada, one thing that I didn't experience personally, but I was in a darshan, whatever, a class by Brahmananda, was reading from his diary in 1967, where he said Prabhupada had a stroke and he was paralyzed from the neck down. And he was sitting up, and the devotees that were there had to bathe him, sponge bath him, and help him to do all the things you have to do when you can't. His arms, legs, everything was frozen except for his head. So while they were serving him, he was non-stop preaching. When I heard that, you know, how he's preaching, he's trying to liberate them from Krishna, I mean from the material world, teach them how to be Krishna conscious. And he's paralyzed from the neck down, but only his mouth is working, so he's just still talking. It's like a vitrasur when his arms are cut off and he's still fighting with Indra. All he got is his mouth left. But I didn't know that pastime when I heard that. Maybe I did. But anyway, when I just couldn't help but cry at how Prabhupada was so committed to pleasing his spiritual master to do something for, that even he's paralyzed. Most people, if you're paralyzed, you just get bedridden, do a little therapy or something, you don't, you know, but he kept preaching. He kept on teaching. Prabhupada ki. Prabhupada ki. Prabhupada ki. I heard Prabhupada once say that the third generation is born with more devotional sattvic qualities. Like the first generation, they're like a, because they have a lot of, they still have contact. I don't know why, but probably third is more important. But the second is important, because if you don't have the second Krishna conscious, you won't have a third Krishna conscious. So, but it's they will have more material qualities than in the third, because maybe their grandparents, or I'm speculating a little bit, I don't know exactly why, but maybe the association with other non-devotees is stronger for them. And but the third has more, so here we got a third generation, right?
Perhaps the third generation, because they're being raised by their grandparents.
You're right, the parents and the grandparents. The parents and the grandparents are both, nobody's sneaking them things they shouldn't eat by the grandparents or something. They're getting all the positive. Any questions or comments? I mean, I know that with this is one temple in Malkote in South India, where Prahlad was traveling with a little deity of Narsingadev. He went to the top of the mountain and he was trying to meditate. And then Narsingadev appeared before him. And I think they said he had a deity, but someone, Narsingadev, appeared before him and told him, "You're not meditating in the right way. It's Satya Yuga." So Narsingadev took the Yoga Narsinga form, showing how to meditate, teaching his devotee, "This is how you meditate." And he had straps around his knees, and so that way he didn't have a lot of pressure around his back and knees. So he's showing. So they have the deity there, self-manifest deity of Yoga Narsinga. After that, Narsingadev turned into a deity and Prahlad was worshipping him. So there's pastimes like that. That's a very merciful form where the Lord is teaching his devotee how to get to him. No, in that other leela, he wasn't, He didn't ask for the boon not to be killed inside or outside. That's why Nrisimhadev could bifurcate him on the throne. But otherwise, in this kalpa, he's not inside or outside, so it was in the doorway. Because the doorway is not in or out. It's kind of in between. I only know three different stories of Nrisimhadev. Mm-hmm. Not like the... No more. One more was Shiva, another one with Brahma. When he was attacking in one pastime, he sent his soldiers to kill Prahlad, and they went to him and threw spears at him and jabbed him with a sword, but whenever the weapon would touch Prahlad, it would turn into a blue lotus. So they came and they're hitting him with so many weapons and throwing arrows at him, and whatever, as soon as it touched him, it turned into a blue lotus. It was like covered with blue lotuses. So reading the scriptures gives us so many like layers of, there's always something new that you learn, something interesting. The Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting as the Amala Purana. I was leading one to pure devotional service. So it's the topmost. So Sri Prabhu gave me some Mayapur Mahaprasadam. Well, the ant's already found it. You got an ant on one here. You better come quick.
Oh. Ask the representative.
I don't think so. But we're vegetarian.
Yeah, we don't need them. They just get it.
Okay, here.